on air, online, on Twitter.
Jennifer Campbell is always on.
Unfiltered, opinionated, and ready to speak her mind at a moment's notice.
This is the Jennifer Campbell Show on 570 News and Rogers TV, Cable 20.
Now, special guest host, Jet Pickle.
No, there ain't nothing that I gotta prove. You think your words will make me black and blue, but I think I'm pretty with these old boots on. I think it's
good morning
when
and welcome to
too much.
The Jennifer Campbell Show. What a gorgeous morning it's turned out to be. I mean, I haven't been outside since I rolled into work this morning at, well, a very early hour, but it looks nice. It looks nice from in here. Hopefully soon I'll be out enjoying that sunshine. Hopefully you get to enjoy it a little bit today as well. Why not, right? Jeff Pickle in once again, filling in for Jennifer Campbell. I'll be in tomorrow as well before Jennifer will be back. Come Monday morning, 9 o'clock sharp. But it's a pleasure to be here filling in. In the meantime, I've had a great week so far. I think today's show is just as good, if not better. A little bit later on, we're going to have registered dietitian Andrea D'Ambrosio in studio here today to help you fuel those summer workouts. I know you wanted to get started on your workouts a little earlier, but things happen. But now summer's here. The weather's nice, so you'll be outside running, doing more. It's going to help us find what type of fuel help you get the best results for those workouts. So excited to be doing that. A little bit later on, we're also going to talk about a league that just can't help itself from controversy. The NFL takes a stand on anthem protesters, saying that they should either stand or stay in the locker room. And, of course, President Trump weighing in as well. If you haven't heard about any of that, we certainly will get to that a little bit later on in the show. But for now, this morning while I was reporting with 570 News, I was replaying clips from an Ipsos polling expert who says that roughly half of those NDP voters who right now are polling, tying in many polls with the PCs, NDP voters are doing so because they don't like either the Liberals or the PCs. So they are not necessarily voting for a party platform they like or necessarily a leader they like. They are voting strategically to get what they see as the least worst outcome. Now, this is the type of political practice that one party is trying to change. The None of the Above Direct Democracy Party want you to vote to protest a broken system. If you don't like any of the big three or big three and a half, if we're going to count the Green Party, why should you feel you have to vote for them come election day? I'm now very pleased to welcome to the show Greg Vesna, the leader of Ontario's None of the Above Party. Greg, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Good morning, and thank you very much for having me.
So it's certainly an interesting party that you're leading, and an interesting idea that was, you know, the creation of this party. Just give me in your words. I gave a little bit of an idea of kind of what the None of the Above Party is all about, but maybe in your words, what can you tell me, is the idea, the formation of this party all about?
Well, it really comes down to something rather simple. We're supposed to live in a representative democracy where we elect representatives to represent us, and they don't. And that's really it. A direct democracy is a system where people have a more direct say. So, you know, we live in a system where we essentially elect a dictator. If you give a government a majority, there's absolutely no opposition. And we don't think that's right. And we really think this comes down to four areas. First, we think people need a recall power, and they need a referenda law so that, A, they can get a piece of law passed or they can stop a politician from doing it, and B, if there's politicians that they want removed, they don't have to wait 4 years while a politician flutters their fingers on the end of their nose and says, go ahead and get me in 4 years. But more importantly, our political system is so badly broken that the politicians, and not all politicians are bad people, most politicians are good people, but then they get elected, and then they meet the whip, and their independence and their ability to do things that they thought they could do is gone. And so we think that when you join a political party and it has policies and it runs on those policies, it should be bound by those policies. And we also think that local people should control their local nominations. And when people make mistakes and they nominate the wrong person, they'll learn. But enough of, you know, follow the leader politics, because we're on the Titanic and we keep hitting the same iceberg. And putting a different captain to drive the ship into the same iceberg isn't doing it, and we got to take a different direction. And that's really what it's all about.
So the idea being that no matter, I mean, which candidate, local candidate you vote in, and what they say, and, you know, however different they are, once it becomes time where they're sitting in Queen's Park, it's just all that individuality is gone, and it's simply a party voice?
Well, because we've moved away from having individual representatives, basically, to having party politics. A generation ago, party names weren't even on the ballot. You knew the person that you were going to vote for. And that person could vote against their party line on issues of conscience or public concern. And they didn't get drummed out of the party or the caucus or, you know, moved into the smallest broom closet in the building. And that's really what happens. You get elected, you go in there all doughy-eyed, I'm going to change the world. The first 2 weeks, they move you into your office, give you your staff, and then they send you down to meet the whip. And the whip says, I got some good news and some bad news. The good news is you can run for us in 4 years. The bad news is if you say one word against us or ever vote against us, you're not going to. Now, I'll see you in 4 years after the next election. Behave. And that's not what a democracy is. We're, you know, we are supposed to elect people that pass policies that benefit the vast majority of us. And we've moved to a system where we have extreme swings, that governments make decisions and then new governments come in and undo the decisions and nothing gets done. The subways in Toronto are a great example. Before you start digging a subway, you spend 50% of the money getting there. So Mike Harris comes in and backfills a subway line. Well, we could have built four subways in the last 40 years over what we spent studying and environmental assessments and backfilling. And so the whole idea of direct democracy is that people get a direct say. And that's really what's lacking. And we're not interested in, you know, government by phone app. We don't want a referendum on everything. But we do want the public to have a say on major issues. And for example, to govern, why should one party have all the answers? If we formed a government, we'd have a cabinet of national unity. We'd bring in the best people from all the parties into our cabinet. And in the first 100 days, we'd say, let everybody give us the best bills you got. And we'd send that to the public in a plebiscite, a non-binding plebiscite, 10, 20, 15 questions, and get what they think. And the things that the public supports most, where the parties agree, we'll just pass the bills. We'll actually get something done. And then we'll spend the next 4 years fighting.
So what are you hoping for come June 7th? I mean, you want votes, you want people to vote for you. Why should they be voting for none of the above party? What do you hope to be able to accomplish?
In politics, there's only one law, and that law is get elected and do everything you can possibly do to stay elected. So we want to use the system against itself. We want people not to be afraid to vote for what they believe in and to stop voting for what they don't believe in. We've been doing that for 150 years. It hasn't really got us anywhere. So we want people to vote for us, because if we get 5, 6, 7, 8% of the vote or more, the first thing that happens is the three backroom people that run the major parties sit down with the new leaders, because there'll be new leaders in a couple of these, and they say, okay, the none of the above guys are going to be the government in the next election. What are we going to do? And they take our policies. And that's how politics work. And that's how it's supposed to work. It's insulting to call the 24 small parties that are registered beyond the big parties in this province fringe parties. Just because someone has an opinion that's not of the mainstream doesn't make them less of a human being. In fact, the research shows that the great political advances and sociological advances in society come from the outside. They come from new parties and they come from new ideas. And we not only do we not accomplish anything by suppressing these things, we actually prevent ourselves from growing. So I say to people, listen to the policies of all of the parties and all of the candidates on the ballot. Because there's some places where there's independents running that are very good candidates too. And then go vote for the person or party that you think best represents what you'd like to see in your democracy, in your daily life. And then let the chips fall where they may. And let that message go across the lands. Let people know that you can actually vote for what you believe in, and it matters. And all we have to do is do that in one election, and it'll change them all across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. Greg Vezina here with none of the above party leader in Ontario. We're talking about the party he leads asking us to vote for, as the party says, none of the above. Greg, so is the idea, I mean, obviously in our system, you can, you know, you were a former part of the Green Party as well. So, you know, electoral success in the way of actually, you know, winning a riding is very tough. So is the idea that, you know, you said you threw out the terms 5 or 6% that that people will see that, that party leaders will see that, that the kind of establishment, so to speak, will see that, and that will be kind of an impetus for that, for some of that change that you're advocating for.
Well, you picked a perfect example. Okay, I was a founding candidate for the Green Party. I was former chief agent and treasurer. You know, we fought the broadcasters who were being included in debates. We challenged Elections Canada over some of the rules that we didn't think was fair. At the end of the day, because the Green Party started getting 2, 3, 4% of the vote, what happened? The Liberals became the Green Party. And the same thing has happened federally. So the policies that the party was founded on, that the public liked and started voting for, forced one of the big parties to basically co-opt all their policies. Well, that's to me a success. There's no need for us to actually elect a single MPP in order to succeed. All we have to do is excite the electorate to give people something to vote for, to believe in, so that they know that the 50% that people don't vote, hey, guess what? Maybe there is a reason to go to that ballot box. And to the 50% of people that do, 75% of which don't like the leaders of any of the parties, the major parties, guess what? There's 24 other leaders of parties, and some of these people are exceptional human beings in their own rights and lead parties with substantial support. Our party, the Libertarian Party, and a couple of the other smaller parties are not small. They are very big. So there's really two levels of politics in Ontario and Canada, and we only see one. We see the big parties. We don't see the medium-sized parties, and we certainly don't see the smaller ones. I'll bet you that there's not one in 100 people can tell you that there are 24 or 28 parties in Ontario.
Yeah, that's a good point. Greg, so, I mean, the party has seen some growth. I know in the first run-around, you had 8 candidates. Now you're up to running in, I believe the number is 42, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, ridings in Ontario. For those of us, and I had it written down here, but I understand in Cambridge and in Waterloo, you know, there might not be there. We do have a candidate in Kitchener Centre, but there's not the availability, not the possibility to always vote for a none of the above candidate at this point in time. How would you? How would the party like to instruct people who would be receptive to this message in a party where you know, they don't have someone in that riding?
Well, again, there are 28 parties on the ballot with candidates, and then there are independents, okay? We suggest that people do the research. You have to go online. You have to go to parties' websites. There are some media that has some fairly extensive coverage, but to be truthful, you know, most of the web content is just on the major parties, where, from third parties. So we want the media, sorry, we want the public to go and study the policies of the candidates running in your riding. And when you get to the end of that exercise, if there's not a candidate that you can support, then don't vote for one. Decline your ballot. Go through the formal process of saying, no, none of these candidates are acceptable. I decline my ballot. Now, to do that, you have to give up your most basic fundamental right to a secret ballot, because you have to do that in public and tell the returning officer with people watching you, which is the reason the rule is there, so that you can embarrass yourself and you won't do it. That's the way politicians work. They pass laws that they say do one thing that actually mean another. It's the same with the $25 million in annual campaign subsidies. I made a number of recommendations to the Legislative Committee for changes. They adopted them, but they made sure that they backdated them. So, for example, if our party won every vote in the province of Ontario in 2018, because we didn't have a constituency association in 2014, we don't qualify for subsidies. So we live in a democracy where the win, place, and show horses in the race are in the winner's circle drinking champagne before we open the gates for the other horses. We do not live in a democracy, and anybody that thinks we do is fooling themselves. But we have a chance to change it. We do actually get to vote every 4 years, and we have more than one party. We are not a three-party state. So we think people should use the tools that we have in this society to get to gain access to knowledge. The internet is a wonderful thing. It's not hard to go find out about the candidates in your riding, and it's not hard to find out what they stand for. And then vote for what you believe in. And if you don't believe in any of them, come out and protest vote and decline your ballot. We're going to go to court and get that changed so you can write decline on the ballot like you can in Manitoba. But the law is the law. Use the rules and the game, the way the game is set up, until you can change the rules.
All right. Excellent, Greg. We ran ourselves right out of time, but thanks so much for giving me a call in. We have to go to a quick commercial break here. Chris and Mark, I see you on the line. You've been waiting for a while. If you can hang on, we'll get to your calls right after this. But for now, we do have to go to a break. Thank you, Greg Vezina, the leader of the None of the Above Party of Ontario. We'll be back in just a moment.
Your 2018 Ontario election updates and analysis happen here.
570 News and at 570news.com.
All right, let's get right back into it here on the Jennifer Gamble Show, because we don't have much time. And Chris and Mark, you've been waiting on the line for a long time here. Chris, we'll get to you first. We were talking about the None of the Above Party and voting essentially in protest here, talking about what Greg Vezina referred to as a broken system. Chris, we got about a minute or so for your thoughts.
Sorry, I had my one-year-old.
That's all good.
I'm surprised only two people called in, because this is probably one of the most important topics I have heard on 570 News in a long time. Our voting system is absolutely broken, and only the people with the right snippet clips that make the news are voted for. I do not like any of the parties, and I will be actually researching this gentleman and his party and looking into who is in my riding that I can vote for, because none of the parties represent the average person anymore. And the 1% is the people who vote, and the rest of us, unfortunately, are sitting on our phones on Facebook, and we're not we're too ignorant to have a say. So we watch it on regular news media. We complain about how our money is being spent, but we don't actually educate ourselves and then vote accordingly. And I think that voting should be law.
Yeah. No, absolutely, Chris. And you make a lot of good points. And I would like to keep you on longer. Just unfortunately, we are in a time crunch. But I think you're saying is making a lot of sense. And I think a lot of people agree. Mark, we got you on the next. We got about a minute here. So what are your thoughts here?
I'll be quick. This guy should put some speakers on the roof of his car and start driving around and opening people's eyes. One thing this would get rid of is the lobbyists that throw the money at the biggest parties around to make sure that they win. I don't know if many people know that George Soros threw so much money at the Trudeau government, and if you look up who George Soros is, he's not a very nice man. But this is why these parties win. And it's time we open our eyes and fix this, or we shouldn't complain.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark, and I think you and Chris before, a lot of people are, you know, feeling that same type of pressure. Thanks so much for the call, Mark. I really do wish we had more time to talk about this. Maybe it will be something we circle around to a little bit later on or on future shows, because clearly it gets people fired up, and understandably so. You know, a lot of people feel that the three major parties, there is no voice for them. Clearly, Mark and Chris are in that category. Okay, we do have to go to the news. Thanks. We do have some other callers waiting. We're just not going to be able to get to it right now. But thanks so much for calling in. We'll go to the news. We'll be back. We'll change directions a little bit. And we'll be talking about a little bit of food. We have a little bit of food talk here on a Thursday morning. We'll be back right after this.
Put the smart in your smartphone. Download the 570 News app and stay informed. 570 News.
Jennifer Campbell Show here. Jeff Pickle filling in on this fine Thursday morning. I almost always want to say afternoon. It feels like afternoon for me again. With the morning show early on, right now is like my noon. It's like my 12 o'clock right now. So I'm about ready to... I've already had my lunch. Which is fitting because we hope to be chatting about nutrition shortly here in the next little while. But before we get to that, just waiting on Andrea D'Ambrosio. Something that was in the news this morning, and I wrote down the date, July 21st. July 21st, BNL, the Bare Naked Ladies playing Binghamton. Mark it on your calendar. One of the outstanding live acts of our time. And we'll get to see him right here at Binghamton. It's pretty cool there. Also, Salt and Pepper. Yeah, Salt and Pepper will be making a, I'm going to say a return to Waterloo Region, because it is possible that they've been here before, but I don't know that for sure. So maybe it's their debut in Waterloo Region, but maybe making a return there at Binghamton's, opening up a new concert venue. Certainly be a fun show. So we are had a spirited conversation just prior to this with, again, that was we were speaking with party leader Greg Vesna. Which party is that he is the leader of? That would be the None of the Above party. They are kind of as they sound, somewhat of a protest against the current political system that really is a three-horse race, often is only a two-horse race. And as we see this right now, it is shaping into a two-horse race, although those two horses in that race have now flipped from usually as PC and Liberals. Now, with the Liberals tanking, it's the NDP and PC, but that's typically what happens as elections draw nearer. Strategic voting comes into play, and rather than voting really for the individual you want in, you start thinking, okay, who do I not want to win? So if you typically vote Liberal, but you're more opposed to having a Doug Ford-led PC party, you flip over to the horse that's out in front, being the NDP. So that's certainly what we see a fair bit of going on, and certainly see a little bit more of that. Now, what we were going to chat about prior to this was the NFL making a, I suppose, somewhat predictable stand, but nonetheless an interesting one, one that made a lot of news and has people, again, understandably upset about the stand or stay at a site looking to quell a national debate that was sparked by Colin Kaepernick, the former San Francisco 49er quarterback, stoked by President Trump and some say chipped away at the very popularity of America's game. NFL owners approved a new policy Wednesday that allows players to protest during the national anthem by staying in the locker room, but forbids them from sitting or taking a knee on the field. So this was a controversy that certainly raged on most of last year, and we even saw it at several times. Several times during the season last year, things kind of popping off, and certainly players taking a stand, especially when it was President Trump who spoke out about what exactly was going on. As soon as he got involved in it, it was a situation where now all of a sudden where people were kind of in the middle, you immediately hop to one side of the fence or the other. And it became a situation that really did inflame it. So once again, President Trump kind of sticking his nose in this and had some really inflammatory statements about it right now, saying that NFL players, if they do want to take a knee, shouldn't be in the league. And then going on to say if they don't want to stand for the anthem, they shouldn't be in the country. So I guess implying there that if you are unwilling to play ball with certainly, I guess, the president's beliefs and the beliefs of many of these owners, that it is a situation where you should not, never mind even be kicked off your team, but kicked out of the country. So really a situation that's spiraling down and out of control. It will be interesting. It will be very interesting to see what happens come the start of the NFL season. I mean, will players, if you were already taking a knee, and then the league, as a protest, and then the league bans the concept of taking a knee during the national anthem, how do you back away from what you were protesting before? Under more scrutiny, doesn't it make it even more kind of justified and worthwhile to then continue to take that knee? You're protesting in a very peaceful way, and the league, your owners, the bosses are saying, no, we can't do this. You can't do this. You have to stay out of sight in the locker room or stand up, and you can't, you know, show any type of peaceful civil disobedience or whatever it may be. So interesting, certainly, thoughts happening there, different things happening there for sure. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I'll be interested to watch. I mean, I don't know. You know, you see what happened to Colin Kaepernick in the first place, and I know there was lots of debate whether or not, you know, he would be playing in the NFL, whether or not he decided if he backed down from his stand at all, whether he what kind of decision he took. So it was interesting there. We might get to a little bit of this in a bit. Why don't we take a break right now? And when we get back to this, the conversation promised to you, we're going to talk a little bit more about what to eat when you're working out, how to maximize those workouts. Let's get to that right after this.
Take flight with Canada's team.
I want to fly.
Follow the Toronto Blue Jays through all 162.
That's way out of here.
Every walk-off hit, every game-saving catch, every heart-pounding strikeout. 570 News, your home for Toronto Blue Jays baseball.
All right, we're back with the Jennifer Campbell Show. And now we're going to be talking nutrition. I know you meant to start your summer workout plan a little bit earlier, maybe January 1st. Maybe it was a New Year's thing. Maybe in March you thought you'd get around to it. Or maybe you did start and you're just not seeing the results you want to. But whatever process, wherever step along the way you are, the fact is the food you eat is likely the biggest indicator of the results you will see. We are in luck today. We have Andrea D'Ambrosio in studio here, a registered dietitian in Kitchener and the owner of Diuretic Directions. as I mentioned, here in studio. So we have a few helpful tips, some strategies, some for people, you know, working out or just to start maybe to doing a workout plan. I know it can be frustrating when you do start, when you are, you know, working out a lot, you kind of plateau and you stop seeing any results. And usually that's an indicator of maybe your diet's not where it needs to be.
With food, basically we want to think of food as fuel. And with nutrition, it's really important to know which foods are going to best fuel your workouts. And even for a lot of clients I see, they are interested in starting physical activity because we know there's lots of benefits. So even decreasing risk for heart disease, cancer, diabetes, osteoporosis, depression, anxiety, all of these benefits come from moving our bodies and being active.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that, you know, there's, you know, I know running and specifically I've seen some studies where running is great for everything in your body, but it doesn't, you don't always see, which is kind of a bit of a mind trick for you, but you don't always see, you know, weight loss that you would see running. You kind of, as I mentioned, you kind of plateau. So how often in your experience do you see people coming in with that exact problem being like, I'm working as hard as I can, but I'm just not seeing the results that I want to see?
So with physical activity, what I often prompt my clients is to look for internal benefits. So this is a little sidestep from watching the scale, which right. I find for a lot of people can be discouraging. And also we know shifts in body mass, someone could be increasing their muscle mass and actually not see a difference on the scale, in which case look for those benefits in terms of how you feel. If you have an increase in energy, decrease in stress, these are all good motivators to continue with being physically active.
And as far as when you are kind of taking those, you know, initial steps, those initial consultations with people, I understand one of the big things, which is why I really enjoy getting your take on things, because they are very realistic and practical advice. I understand one of the big things is just telling people, you know, despite your loss may be, you know, losing weight or getting fitter, eating enough is still one of the big principles of actually, you know, getting healthier.
For sure. And eating the right types of foods, which we'll talk about today, to really fuel your muscles and work out with lots of energy.
Yeah, and let's get into that, because I know another thing from just taking a quick look at your blog post there is we certainly hear a lot about carbohydrates and, you know, certain diets trying to avoid them completely. Certain diets try to, you know, limit them. But, you know, carbohydrates really are an important part to just having that energy to work out. So why are you a dietitian who recommends, if you are working out, to still be consuming carbs when some diets say, you know, right, to avoid them?
Yeah, so carbohydrates are our body's preferred source of fuel. And when we're working out, our muscles actually utilize that carbohydrates to give us energy. And we store our carbohydrates as glycogen, which is basically a fancy word for muscle fuel. So if we under consume carbohydrates, we actually decrease our accessible energy, and our muscles, when they're deprived of our primary fuel, will actually break down muscle mass before fat mass. So we do want to make sure we have enough carbohydrates because we want to keep our muscles intact and not break them down for energy.
Who are those, like, the really low carb diets for? Who is that for? Who does that benefit? I know there's some, you know, kind of specialty training people doing, you know, very specific training, try to avoid that. How is that different from, you know, someone different from, you know, an average myself just trying to be healthier?
Right. In my practice, what I do is I look at the exercise regime for the individual and then their pre-nutrition and then their post-recovery. And oftentimes we can increase the activity and the endurance by moderating the carbohydrate amount. So for clients I see in practice who might be athletes or marathon runners, we're for sure including those carbohydrates, and it's not something I would recommend avoiding.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I know that's another thing that's getting a little bit more specific, but certainly has a lot of benefits, is you talk about the timing of your eating as well, and how important it is to kind of know when you have certain foods, it can really affect your workout. Mm,
for sure. So with nutrition, we basically want to think about our macronutrients, which are essentially our main building blocks, our main sources of energy and fuel. So we have our carbs, which we want to think of as energy for our muscles. And then we have our protein, which is our building block for muscle tissue repair. And with the timing, we always want to think about carbohydrates pre-workout. And with the type of carbohydrates, because we know there's lots of different ones, we want to basically have carbohydrates that provide that source of fuel without slowing digestion. So if you have something like a high fiber cereal or whole grain bread that's over 5 grams of fiber, that actually will not be good pre-workout because it slows the release of blood sugar for your energy and for your muscles.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Maybe before we moved on from carbohydrates, that's a very broad term. Speaking of carbohydrates, they're sure. in a lot of stuff. So there are ways to consume carbohydrates and still, do it a little bit more strategically. And you know, we heard the term good carbs a lot. How do we do that? I know we talk about here about brown rice and brown bread and that sort of thing. What are we looking for to consume the best carbs?
For sure. So overall, we want to choose carbohydrates in our diet that have fiber in them. This is just a healthier option, higher in vitamins, higher in minerals. However, pre-workout, our best accessible energy is going to be things like fruits and even certain starchy vegetables, because they're not going to take a long time to digest.
And how long, just purely based on the fact that you probably don't want too much food in your stomach, how long, what's the kind of the closest to a workout you want to eat at? How much space do you want to give yourself?
For sure. So if you are hungry before a workout and you have less than 1 hour, go straight for carbohydrate only. So this might be having half a banana and then hitting the gym. So it's enough just to bump that energy level up with the carbohydrate, and then you can have your post-workout recovery meal afterwards. If you have about 2 hours to digest before a workout, include protein.
2 hours, include the protein before, but if you're rushed, like we are sometimes, try to avoid protein and just stick with as you said, just a kind of lighter carb
for sure.
snack before you head in.
Yeah.
And you talked about the post-workout, which I think is also, in my experience, something people kind of maybe look over a little bit more than they should. Just like when you're stretching after a workout, it's probably more important than stretching before a workout. So your muscles eating after, it can be in many ways, as a vital thing when you're looking to build muscle.
For sure. And even for people who work out on a daily basis, that recovery meal is so important, because we're basically priming yourself for tomorrow's workout. In which case, after a workout, always consume a carbohydrate and a protein within 2 hours of that workout would be ideal. 15 minutes would be even more optimal, but not often feasible.
Right. So we try to get it in pretty quick after is the idea. Because is that just it? The body's burning, it's churning, and the quicker you can kind of get it in there is the better?
So the muscles are most receptive to protein, research shows, within 15 minutes. So this is where the chocolate milk marketing board kind of comes in, and chocolate milk has a carb to protein ratio that's ideal, in which case that could be a recovery drink, but it's not to say it's the only option. You could also do a fruit and peanut butter as a recovery snack as well.
Absolutely. I'm always fascinated when I'm at the gym and you see the people who live there and also really know obviously the nutritional side of things, and jamming in food mid-workout and then right after, so you kind of look at it, it's like, all right, give it a break, man. Like, you'll be fine. But no, but like for those people who are, sometimes in competitions and sort of stuff like that or CrossFit or whatever it may be, those people know how important it is to really, be super specific and time those meals out so well.
For sure.
And I know another big part of it, and it's something that's often so forgotten, whether you're working out or just in your daily life, is the super importance that hydration plays in this whole process. Mm-hmm. Why is it important to, beyond the obvious, just the fact that you're sweating more, why is hydration such a big part of the overall plan?
So hydrated muscles are less prone to injury. They move better. And this means that basically an individual can work out at a higher level with lower perceived fatigue.
Yeah, no, and that's what I, anytime I feel like, waking up, and I'm always a little tired and groggy, but anytime I feel I'm more so, I've been able to usually identify, meaning that I just haven't drank enough water, and it just slows everything down so much. How often do you find that is a message that you need to pass along to your patients, that you know, reminding them so much that, just a simple task like drinking water is something they need to improve on.
For sure. And even having it readily available. So if it's in front of us during the day, we're more likely to consume it. For people working out, they often forget to pre-hydrate. So this is something before your workout, include about 500 mils of water. This helps to prime your muscles for that workout.
And hydration, you know, kind of being like a day-long process as well, because you can only, absorb so much. So it really is something, you know, especially working out, you need to be, I suppose, thinking about, you know, the entire day, because if you just try to get a bunch of water right before, that's going to do more harm than good.
It's definitely important to be well hydrated throughout the day, and then also specifically right before, during your activity is also an important time to hydrate as well. And then post-workout, we want to rehydrate our body as well.
Let's talk about one of my favorite topics in the world, my favorite things in the world, and that's breakfast. Obviously, we hear it all the time, the most important meal of the day. And my favorite part, other than just liking the foods itself, what I've heard before is because it is the first meal of the day, that's if you're going to eat some foods that may not be so healthy, or at least they're, you know, richer in fat, that's the time to eat them, which is the reason I love breakfast. That's the theory I've been working with. Is that true? Is that kind of a principle that I'm fine working with, thinking that, you know, if you're going to have one big, you know, really rich meal, that breakfast is the time to do it?
With breakfast, it's certainly important to have that meal, and ideally within 2 hours of waking up. It's kind of like throwing a log in a fire. So it gets that metabolism burning. To say that it's maybe a time to have more decadent meals, I'd say that would be a personal choice.
And by that, I mean bacon specifically.
Yeah. And it can definitely be included in your diet.
Yeah, that's one of those, you know, when you hear like half a fact from someone who might not know exactly, have all the facts straight. So I've just taken it as eat as much as you want at breakfast, and there's no worry about it. So maybe I'll have to rethink about that. If there is some, you know, one or two major, you know, what's the most common mistakes made when you're kind of doing those first couple, you know, consultations with a patient or with a client, I suppose. What are those, a couple of the most common things you hear?
One of the biggest things I find is that when people are trying to eat healthier, they often cut foods out, like carbohydrates, that help to regulate their appetite and control their cravings. So this is where I would encourage people who are looking to improve their nutrition to really focus on balance. So we don't want to undereat, which basically promotes overeating, in which case having a regular structure to your 3 meals a day, have snacks if you need them, and understanding how carbohydrates can be utilized to basically bump that energy level up, and how protein can help slow digestion to help people feel full for a longer time.
Yeah, I know it's a hurdle to get over, thinking that you have to kind of eat more sometimes to actually, you know, if that goal is to lose weight. Well, thanks so much for coming in. We pretty much ran ourselves right out of time. And I said before we started, I particularly like having you on because I use this as my own personal consultation as well. So I ask the questions that I'm not sure about. It's great. So hopefully everyone listening was able to pick up some things as well. Andrea D'Ambrosio, a registered dietitian and owner of Diuretic Directions. Thanks so much for taking the time to join me today.
Awesome to be here.
Okay, great. So yeah, that is the show. And we're done for the day. We'll be back tomorrow at this time. Coming up now, we have the Mike Farwell Show right after a news update. But that's all from me. Thanks for listening.